This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodi. When your elderly relatives suddenly start behaving strangely, you may sort of suspect dementia, Alzheimer's, you know. However, bipolar disorder in the elderly can also cause symptoms like mania and depression. Consultant psychiatrist and geriatric psychiatrist Dr. Bharathi Venkatasalam is here in the studio with us to help us understand what bipolar is in the elderly. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bharathi. How are you today?
Thank you, Meera, and thank you, BFM, for this nice invite.
You're most welcome. I've never heard of bipolar in the elderly, Dr. Bharathi. I mean, how does that happen? Can you and what triggers bipolar in the older person?
Well, bipolar in the elderly is fairly rare, but yet more common than originally thought. Because when people reach age 60 and above, you'll find that either they've had a bipolar illness earlier, which was missed and not diagnosed, or they've had episodes of depression earlier, which did not come to professional attention. And then finally, after the age 60, suddenly they could have their very first episode of mania or depression or a mixed episode, you see. Or it could be the very first episode occurring after age 60.
And maybe just to take a couple of steps back, what is bipolar? How would you best describe it?
Okay, so bipolar is a severe mental health condition. It's a mental illness, and it's characterized by unusual shifts in mood, energy, and activity, and it affects the ability of someone to function. And those shifts in mood aren't the normal moods that we experience. It's very intense, it's amplified, and the sort of modes that a person with bipolar disorder can experience is either extreme elation, anger, irritability, extreme anxiety, or low and despairing mode. And these shifts that occur can really impact, as I said, their sleep, their levels of energy, their levels of activity, and impact their social relationships and relationships at work. So you have many types of episodes. As you know, mania and depression is the old term for bipolar illness, where previously bipolar disorders were called manic depressive illness. So the mania is considered the highs, the depression is considered the lows, but there's also a mixed period where you have both features. And what is sometimes missed is extreme anxiety, actually.
So it's more like an emotional roller coaster. And how far apart can the mania and, you know, the depression be? And I'm just going to use mania and depression as just, you know, to look at how you can be up there one day and then totally down emotionally on the other. But how far apart do these moods present?
Well, by right, when you talk about different episodes, you may want even a gap of 2 months to properly diagnose episodes. But often, people with bipolar disorders can even experience fluctuations within a day. And sometimes, to diagnose an episode of mania, you normally need at least 4 days of being 4 days for hypomania and a week of being manic in order to be able to diagnose, to have that particular episode.
Can you explain those three phases? Mania, okay. So manic, and hypomania.
So mania would be the most severe phase that lasts a week or shorter if a person needed hospitalization, right? And during that period, mood is very irritable or angry or elated, and is associated with a decreased need for sleep. And there's increased, what we say, goal-directed activity and increased activity in that needs pleasurable consequences. Thoughts will race, and there's pressured speech. There's a lot of flight of ideas and extreme overactivity of the mind. So that usually we will use a week. But if it's very severe, someone gets admitted even before the week is over, that's already called a manic episode because it was so severe that it required hospitalization. So that's one episode. And hypomania is I would say, a milder version of the mania, where it was just lasting for 4 days.
Okay.
And often they don't require admission for a hypomanic episode most of the time.
Could you give me an example, perhaps, of how somebody would go through these three phases?
Well, you see, in bipolar disorder, it's not necessary that they would fluctuate between highs and lows all the time. A person could just have a single high episode for their life in order to be diagnosed to have a bipolar illness. So for bipolar 1, you require a very one manic episode. For bipolar 2, you just require one hypomanic episode. The depressive episodes sometimes don't come to attention. It is the manic episodes that tend to be caught very easily.
Examples of a manic episode?
Okay, so during these periods, a patient with bipolar disorder may not sleep. There's decreased need for sleep. And there's extreme activity, and sometimes in those periods, there's impaired judgment, very hasty investments, gambling, an increased libido, which sometimes causes them to, embark on affairs which normally they wouldn't have embarked on, and being very susceptible to being cheated with hasty investments. And with that irritability and anger, there is extreme sensitivity to relationships and nuances of those relationships, resulting in fights, being more quarrelsome, being increasingly opinionated during that time.
Do we know what causes it, though?
Well, a mixture of things, specifically for geriatric bipolar disorder. We often speak about genetic factors being much less compared to those who've developed bipolar disorder earlier. And we do notice that patients with a geriatric bipolar disorder, they seem to have a higher chance of a subtle neurological illness.
Such as?
If we do their scans, sometimes they seem to have more what we call white matter hyperintensities, ischemic changes in the blood flow of the brain, tiny little strokes perhaps, in especially the frontal portion of the brain, which disrupts the circuitry. So it's very essentially a brain disorder for sure, and hidden strokes. And so for geriatric bipolar disorders, we also want to rule out other medical illnesses which could cause these bipolar disorders in an older person.
So you mentioned at the age of 60, it usually presents 60 and above. Is that what you're saying? And how do you know that it's not something else? How do you know at 60 it's not dementia or it's not the onset of something else?
Yeah, so that's a very important question. Whenever an older person presents with a manic episode for the first time in their life after age 60, we are immediately alerted to the fact that it could be a hidden medical cause. We often do blood screens to rule out hidden medical illnesses. We look at their hormones. We look at the medications an older person uses in case those medicines are the culprit for causing a manic episode. And we'll definitely want to do a scan, a CT scan or an MRI, a scan of the brain to look out for tumors or even hemorrhages, hidden strokes. In terms of clinical features, you see, when someone is manic, if it's very short onset with no pre-existing history of memory decline over a period of time, we would want to assume it's a mood disorder first. And we wait and watch out. We watch out whether, look, is the memory improving after the mood lifts?
So mood, memory sort of is lost during this period of mania?
Well, yes. So in a manic episode, attention is really impaired. They're very distractible. Thoughts race. So rather than a memory that's lost because of dementia, it's impaired because you're not paying attention in the first place. So it kind of doesn't get laid down in your hard drive.
Okay, and hence the memory.
Yes. Yes.
So what's coming through is you're saying in the elderly, there's a very low chance that it's genetically linked. It's possibly got to do with a medical condition. Are you seeing many of these cases in your clinic?
Yes, I do, because the population of patients that I work with are geriatric. Of course, we don't have statistics for Malaysia, but the range can be anything between 0.1 to 0.5% of older people having a geriatric bipolar disorder. Rare, but significant enough to enter our practice, because we do see patients who require those referrals.
Okay. And is it something that you're concerned about?
Yes, as all mental illnesses.
Because I can just imagine the number of people who haven't been diagnosed. If you don't come forward,
yes,
and you just assume it's either a mood disorder or it's dementia and that kind of thing, then is it easy to miss a diagnosis like bipolar in the elderly?
Yes, so geriatric bipolar disorder is a mood disorder. And it does tend to be missed because sometimes it is assumed to be just depression, what we call a unipolar depression. So a patient may come in the depressive phase, but the bipolar part was missed. That's one scenario. The other scenario is that because it fluctuates, irritability, the minor mood swings may not be considered severe enough to the family, but actually it is because it may be implosive rather than explosive. You see?
Mm. And when it comes to managing this, do you find that families are open to working with the patient and, you know, are they accepting of this diagnosis?
Patients who come definitely are, because they're coming forward. They're coming forward to seek help, and usually it's the intervention of the family that brings them forward. So the caregiver's openness and awareness of this condition makes a lot of difference. I would say that spouse support and family support is sometimes a very important factor in allowing the patient to stay in treatment. If the family are not open and not supportive, often the patient falls through.
In Dr. Bharti, sometimes it's hard. I mean, 60 years of age today is still young.
Yes, very.
And how do you convince of a family member that they need help to get it, even getting them to the hospital, that something could be wrong? And most of the time, they're in denial. As far as they're concerned, they're absolutely fine.
Yes.
But how do you go through that process of getting them to somebody like you to be diagnosed?
So, what is important is to be able to share and point out your observations of what is what has gone wrong or what is distressing the person. And if you're able to discuss what distress this person is experiencing, you could use that as a moot point to bring them over. You know, okay, if this is what you're distressed with, this is what you're upset with, why don't you discuss that with a professional? Okay? If there's nothing wrong, let them sort it out. I mean, don't insist that something is definitely wrong. Use the point of the distress the patient is experiencing in order to allow the patient to seek help, rather than insisting that something is, wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, use the distress to bring the patient in for professional attention. But sometimes in severe cases, when there's a lot of aggression or aggressive outbursts, then unfortunately more difficult measures have to be taken.
Yeah. As you said, heavy investments, credit card bills, all of that can come. And it impacts the family at the end of the day.
Yes.
Okay, we're discussing bipolar disorder among the elderly with Dr. Bharati Venkatasalam. She's a consultant psychiatrist and geriatric psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, we'll find out more about how best as a caregiver to care for somebody like this, as well as the best way to treat a condition like this. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In the studio with me, Dr. Bharati Venkatasalam, consultant psychiatrist and geriatric psychiatrist. We're discussing bipolar disorder among the elderly. Most of us know bipolar disorder as something that only happens in the younger people. But obviously now, as Dr. Bharati has alluded to, bipolar disorder among the elderly is happening. It is not as common as you said, Dr. Bharati, but you seem to be seeing more and more cases, going forward. At the moment, it is less likely to do with genetics, is what I'm hearing from Dr. Bharati, and most of the time, possibly got to do with a medical condition, a little stroke or something that could have triggered. It's a chemical imbalance in the brain. Is that what's happening, Dr.
Definitely.
Bharati?
Definitely, there's definitely changes in the neurochemistry and in the circuitry, pathways, receptors. neurochemical changes that are going on in the brain, yes.
So does that mean that when you're, because you're older, chances of managing a disorder like this is going to be a little bit more difficult?
Oh, definitely, because firstly, diagnosing it and identifying it may take more time. And then the treatment response changes. And also deciding the form of treatment that is most right for this older person, because older people tend to have other medical conditions. So the choices of medications have to be tailored to also fit in with their other medications and their other medical conditions. And we need to be very cognizant about side effects, about those sort of interactions. Because of coexisting medical illnesses, we also concerned that, you know, certain medications that are used, we need to monitor it properly. Doses that are used are usually lower, and they're tapered up more slowly, so response may take a bit longer. And several trials may be needed before someone completely responds to the medication.
Is there anybody who is at higher risk of developing bipolar disorder in the older age?
Okay, although I said that genetic factors are less likely in older people who developed mania for the first time, still, of course, whenever there's family history, the risk is higher. And those that have subtle neurological illnesses, okay, in the brain, and those who've been exposed to difficult life events, whether it's a loss, death of a loved one, death of a significant other, those sort of conditions,
something
divorce,
that triggers
migration, and sometimes in early life, when someone has experienced trauma, that can resurface later.
Yeah. How is it diagnosed, though?
So, well, firstly, we conduct an interview, okay, a very detailed interview with very careful history taking. With that sort of history taking, we delineate the symptoms that a person is experiencing. How severe are those symptoms? We look at those symptoms according to what we call the DSM-5, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, or something called an ICD, International Classification of Diseases. So we discuss the symptoms, we see how severe and significant it is, so that helps you with the history. We also need to speak to the family members, because sometimes patients can have a bit of a blind spot about what their behaviours have been or what the impact has been to others. So having a family member's history really helps, because sometimes a patient who's undergoing, who's experienced bipolar disorder may actually miss a period that he was manic in the past, or what we call hypomanic in the past. So family feedback is important. Then we conduct a physical examination to make sure that there are no medical conditions that are perhaps causing this. We go through the medication chart that a patient is taking. And we will go through memory assessments because, you know, earlier on we spoke about how mania and dementia can mimic one another. Yeah. So we sit down and we go through a memory assessment to establish the baseline memory of this person while he's not well. And then subsequently, blood investigations need to be done, and also imaging, brain imaging, so that we rule out other culprits for his mood disorder right now.
So to be absolutely sure, yes, it is indeed bipolar disorder. Yeah. It's interesting that you need to measure baseline memory, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
And then after that, follow up. You
yes.
keep checking over time
yes.
as to how this person is actually doing.
That's quite important because geriatric bipolar disorders have got different complications later in life. There is a higher risk of developing dementia years down the line. So that's considered one of the outcomes of geriatric bipolar disorder, that it could actually predate dementia.
The fact that you know that, yeah. can you actually do anything now to prevent the onset of dementia?
Yes, I mean, your midlife is those years that are so protective, you know. A lot of things can turn around in this age group, 40 to 60, in terms of your physical activity, the mental activity, and being very social. So these three factors are very important to age well and has a protective factor in aging. Nothing is preventive, but these three things are the things that people can work on in midlife.
And so with bipolar, there's not a lot you can do once you have it, can you?
Yeah, you can't undo it, no. But you can manage it.
How do you manage it?
Yeah, so management should always be a mix of things. Should be holistic, I would say. It's not just about medication. Medication is an essential part of it, though, because this is not just your normal sadness. And these are biological brain disorders. So you have medications, which are mood stabilizers, with a mix of perhaps antipsychotics or antidepressants. But mood stabilizers are the mainstay. Those have to be used to help to prevent future relapses. However, if you just rely on medication and don't work on psychotherapy and the social interventions, the chances of relapses will be high. So psychotherapy is important, engaging with the patient, giving them support, looking into what are the dynamic issues going on, what is his conflicts. Working with the family is very important because you need that family intervention or spouse interventions. Spouse support. And looking at things like mindfulness and your lifestyle. So if lifestyle factors interfere with the bipolar disorder, for example, if there's substance abuse, okay, or alcohol dependence, that makes the chances of relapsing very, very high. So, you know, so it has to be multimodal.
You can't, sounds like a lot of hard work, Dr. Bharati.
Yeah, it is a mix, definitely.
And somebody needs to ensure that this older person is compliant.
Mm.
Is that a challenge, though?
Very much.
Because
caregivers are the ones who need to supervise a medication in someone who has no insight about his or her condition. So caregivers need to be able to understand what the episodes are like, to be able to identify early warning signs, perhaps, okay, to direct their loved one in quickly for an appointment if they're already noticing the possibility of a relapse. Also, in an aftermath of an episode, for example, in the aftermath of a manic episode and judgment was impaired and wrong decisions were taken, it really impacts the family. For example, earlier on we spoke about hasty investments, debts, gambling, affairs. How do you reconcile that with forgiveness and supporting one another and understanding what happened in that episode? So if there's a lot of resentment and build up, those interactions and family dynamics can really be very volatile, you know.
So that means that medication and whatever that you do is not foolproof, as in you can still relapse.
Yes.
Even under medication and all of that.
Yes.
Why is that?
Because it's biopsychosocial, right? Biology changes, but there will be some triggers that will perhaps put a person to be more vulnerable to relapse, right? If there's family conflicts, for example. So a person can be better under treatment, but if the family conflicts are ongoing, those push the buttons again. So we have to look at things more holistically. And if, as I mentioned earlier, if there's substance abuse, that substance abuse is going to promote the chances of further relapse. So we got to deal with substance abuse separately.
You know, when it comes to the caregiver, what's been your observations based on patients? How are caregivers coping? And, you know, most of the time caregivers, I mean, you'll be lucky if you have a spouse or a partner who's still around to help look after you. But often children have to actually double up and manage an older person.
Yes.
And I'm sure it can be quite a challenge because, you know, we call them the sandwich generation, isn't
it?
Yes. The people who have their own children and now have elderly parents to manage. Not to make it sound like it's an absolute burden, but how do you, what is the, is there a, are there other options besides people at home looking after somebody with bipolar when they're older? Or does it depend on what stage they're in? Can it actually move on to a more advanced stage? Or is there a milder stage? You know, what
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So how do we? So if it gets bad, then what are your options?
You see, a bipolar disorder tends to be episodic, right? So in between, a patient may be very well and functioning as normal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the good case. Okay, then you have patients who, in between episodes, they have they still experience mood symptoms. So that is harder for the family. But if a patient is very compliant and very engaged in therapy, attending his appointments, doing what it takes to manage the condition, then it's much easier for the family. It is manageable, you know. It's not as difficult as it sounds. Mm-hmm. It's harder for the family members who have a loved one who refuses treatment, I would say. Once you have a family member who suffers from bipolar disorder, who's willing to do what it takes to attend his appointments, go for his therapy, it is manageable as much as possible. When you talk about stages, we talk about those that are severe with psychotic features. So during that time, of course, an admission may be required. But once the admission process is over and a patient is discharged, it doesn't mean he is bedbound or bedridden, you know. So it's more of your emotional support rather than a physical support. But of course, loved ones need to help their family members attend appointments, because not all our patients are very cooperative in coming for each and every appointment. And sometimes after recovering, there may be a stage where they feel, okay, I don't need to come anymore. I'm quite well now. And that's the danger of it.
And what's the worst thing that could happen if you opt not to get treatment? How will this disorder progress?
Okay, so there will be more and more relapses, right? And with the more relapses a person has, the worse the prognosis of the illness is. So taking medication means you reduce your chances of relapses. You don't negate it, but you reduce it significantly.
Okay. But could that lead to perhaps suicide, perhaps, or, you know, more, you know, outcomes which, you know, nobody really wants to talk about?
Of course, yeah. So, suicide can occur both in the manic phase and also the depressive phase. Because in a manic phase, people think that patients are only happy, but they're also very agitated and their decision-making is very impaired. They can be quite impulsive. So suicide risk is high in the manic phase and, of course, in the depressive phase, because lose hope, sense of worthlessness, sense of uselessness, and a sense of foreshortened future. So a feeling of being trapped and taking the way out through suicide is there. The other problem that happens is if you leave mood episodes untreated, some of that can further progress into psychosis. So psychosis is when the reality is lost, you know, and a patient with mania has mania with psychotic features.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's like double whammy.
Correct. Yeah. Or depression with psychotic features, starting to get delusions of persecution or delusions of poverty or delusions of guilt. So once delusions set in, hallucinations set in, so that's the severe stage of a manic or a depressive episode.
Is it ever too late to get treated?
No, never too late. But the longer it's delayed, it takes longer to respond.
Even with the medication?
Even with the medication, because certain baggage sets in, you know, failed relationships, regrets, and those things come up in psychotherapy then.
Okay.
You know, working
right.
through
okay.
the
so there's more baggage.
Baggage. Like, there's okay. more baggage.
Because you've
yeah.
come later.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Bharathi, when it comes to treatment options for bipolar, I mean, I know for younger people, there is something called the electric shock therapy. I call it the electric shock therapy, but it's where you sort of shock the brain and get it going for bipolar disorder. And I personally know people who have benefited from this. Mm. Younger people, of course.
Yes.
But is this an option for older people?
Yes, it is. You know, paradoxically, despite the stigma of ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, it's a very viable and effective option for older people. In fact, for older people, the threshold for considering electroconvulsive therapy is slightly lower. As long as they are medically fit, they may be a good candidate for ECT, especially for those who are suicidal, who are not eating and not drinking in a phase of bipolar illness. And for both the high phase and the low phase, ECT is a very good option, especially when we can't wait for treatment response, because responding to treatment can take time. And during that time, ECT can be a really life-saving measure.
But what's it doing to the brain, actually?
Well, we believe that it changes the regulation, the down-regulation of the receptors and the neurochemistry of the brain, but it's very hard to actually identify the final pathway in ECT. It hasn't been completely elucidated, you know, which pathway it is, which receptor it is. But definitely, the efficacy is good in a selected patient.
Any hopes for research for this condition?
I guess what happens is that a lot of the research in geriatric bipolar disorder is based on younger populations, mm-hmm. and that's translated into older populations. But so more studies have to be done on geriatric populations, and it has to be a little bit more relaxed in the entry criteria, because often it's very rigid, like older patients with medical problems cannot enter studies, for example. But it's very hard to get an older patient who's completely medically fit.
Absolutely.
You see? So in the real world, it's been a tough thing to select patients more rigorously into studies, and also things that are cultural. You know, what works for, let's say, Caucasian patients need to be also seen in Asian patients. So it's more international.
Okay. Anything promising, though?
No. Well, I do feel that awareness makes a big difference. Coming forward and reducing stigma is important.
Well, I didn't know there was such a condition in the elderly, you know. So well done. Thank you so very much. Would you have a message for us for bipolar disorder among the elderly?
Well, I would say that it is a treatable condition. It's definitely manageable. Be engaged and be connected to your doctor and your family, yeah? And discuss things with an open dialogue. Patients need to understand their rights. They need to be aware of bringing up more information that would help their doctor help them.
Thank you very much for joining us. Dr. Bharathi Venkatasalam, consultant psychiatrist and geriatric psychiatrist, speaking to us about bipolar disorder among the elderly on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.